Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It looks like we're having a little difficulty with our starting music. It's set to come on, but apparently nothing's happening. So I'll introduce myself. Welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Rowland, and I'm your hostess for this evening, and we're glad to have you with us. As always, we are brought to you through the good offices of www.patriotfamilies.com, a great group of people who truly believe that we are the nation. Tonight's topic, ladies and gentlemen, is data mining. Data mining basically means using information stored on computers or accessed on computers to determine the needs, likes, potentials, interests, characteristics, personalities, and practically any other aspect of a human being that you can find that will aid businesses in targeting you with specific commercials, will aid government in figuring out just how dangerous you might be to the status quo or the collective, and making sure that our children are nudged and steered and pushed and shoved into their proper slot in the collective machine. Data mining is part and parcel of the Common Core, which more and more schools are adopting under the threat of losing federal funding if they don't. So far, my state of Virginia is free of Common Core, but that's only because, according to their incredibly brilliant minds, the government figures that our curriculum is sufficiently proper that we don't need to change it and adjust it to Common Core. Unfortunately, that doesn't please me very much. Even though I don't want Common Core in Virginia, I don't like the idea that the federal government approves of our curriculum very much either, because it means that whatever we're doing in our public schools here in my home state is pleasing almighty government. Our current administration and the leadership in the Senate, the majority leader in particular, and the former majority leader in the House, believe that the purpose of government is to guide you into your appropriate position in the collective, meaning that whatever your skills or talents, they must be used for the benefit of everyone, and government decides exactly what that use will be. With Common Core and the testing it requires, our children are being monitored, measured, programmed, and I guess you could say redesigned into proper components of the collective mentality that is in vogue in Washington, D.C. right now. And I am not choosing one party over the other, although the Democratic Party currently is more inclined to be open and blatant about their desire to create a collective, and the Republican Party is more interested in maintaining enough power to be able to keep their men in office and agreeing to the collectivism idea with a lot of lip service to the idea of individual liberty and very little actual effort put forth in creating a climate where it can flourish. We need to be able to test our children to find out whether or not they have achieved mastery of skills and concepts that will prepare them to go further in their educational lives. This is an obvious situation. This is absolutely necessary. Testing children to see whether or not they've learned anything goes all the way back to Socrates, when the open forum was where the young men of better family gathered to listen to the philosophers and learn rhetoric and logic and forensics, which is the art of debate. I'm sure they were tested too. All you have to do is to read Plato's dialogues and you'll see what type of test they had. And the Socratic method was actually slightly better than what we use today, but only works very well one-to-one. Our teachers are being told that they're responsible for making sure that children learn. Well, first of all, this is absolutely ridiculous because nobody can make sure that a child learns except the child. teachers are being told that they are required, under our benevolent government's view that all children deserve a free, appropriate public education, appropriate for the child, not necessarily appropriate for the needs that child might have to function as an adult. And thus, the teacher must tailor all information given to a classroom of 20 to 30 students so that each and every child in that class receives the kind of teaching and presentation of material that he or she can understand and cope with best. Yet, they are also required to maintain a chronological timetable of skills and concepts mastery, culminating at the end of the school year in mastery of a broad range of material in four basic core areas: language arts, mathematics, science, and social studies. Now, I have been involved in education and been teaching people for probably about 40 years now. I haven't really counted because when I do, it makes me feel incredibly old, and I'm not quite ready to, you know, start talking with a lisp and walk hunched over and eat things that, you know, have to go through a blender first. So I really don't like to feel old. I know I am, and I wouldn't trade what I've learned in my life experience for youth again. I'll take a youthful body, though, because this one's getting fairly creaky. But even I, with 40 years in education, am bright enough to know that no matter what you do, you can lead a horse to water, but you cannot make him drink. And this happy little cliche homily applies directly to school children. Children can be offered education and an opportunity to learn, but they cannot be made to learn. The only things they can be made to learn are behaviors that are self-preserving. For example, the old-fashioned rod and cane style of discipline, beating the child until he or she sat still in class for fear of another painful session. The only thing you did when you did that was to encourage the child to do anything possible to avoid physical pain. Well, this is already built in anyway. That's why we have pain in the first place, so that we don't stick our hands inside a fire and watch it burn merrily and wind up having no digits left. So spare the rod and spoil the child, although it's good advice when done judiciously, carefully, and never in anger, is not a good way to teach children academic subjects. We're going through, in my middle school right now, a series of meetings for the teachers where they have to put together their lesson plan testing parameters to fit with what they have been told is the appropriate way to test higher thinking skill as well as retention of knowledge. The person in the school, who is a good friend of mine, charged with attending a seminar on how to do this, has now had added to her duties as a teacher going over the testing material for four core subjects in three grades to make sure that tests are doing these things. Well, apparently, I heard today that the individual giving the seminar was an English teacher. And I was talking with one of our foreign language teachers, and she was explaining to me exactly, well, she was trying to explain to me why she was baffled that she couldn't do this with foreign language. Well, she has a right to be baffled because you can't. Foreign language, learning a foreign language, is memorization and understanding the grammatical structure of the language. Higher thinking and critical thinking skills have absolutely nothing to do with the acquisition of another language. I was taught Spanish in high school and in college. I speak it fairly well. I practiced it on a daily basis, talking to myself in the mirror because nobody in my family spoke Spanish. I went over and over and over the structure of the language. I learned the position of nouns and adjectives, how to conjugate verbs. But then again, you see, I started with an advantage because I knew what those parts of speech were before I entered my first Spanish class. I was also talking with another language teacher today who was having a frustrating time trying to get her 8th graders, who are taking a Spanish 1 for high school credit course, to understand that they're not going to be able to write a Spanish sentence if they don't know what a verb is. Now, what critical thinking skills are you going to put into a test when the students don't understand that in order to pass it, they actually have to remember how to conjugate the verb hablar, which means to speak, by the way. And it was one of the first ones that I learned. And I learned it approximately 50 years ago. And I still know that you conjugate it in the present tense. Yo hablo, tú hablas, él y ella habla, usted habla, nosotros hablamos, ustedes hablan, vosotros habláis, and ellos and ellas hablan. I learned it, you see, because I practiced it. It didn't require critical thinking skills. I have plenty of those. But it did require memorization. The current fad is that memorization is evil and bad and children don't really learn anything. It's the same stupid, oxymoronic, throw the baby out with the bathwater, faddish approach to education that we see over and over and over again. There are some aspects of education that need to be memorized. There are others that need to be discussed, examined, thought about, critiqued, and expressed in both opinion and fact. When you blend these two forms of learning and teaching, hopefully you will have an educated student. But you will not have an educated student if that student is being told, both directly and subliminally, that if he doesn't do his homework, doesn't study for tests, and doesn't show up for class, it's okay, he should get an A because the teacher is magic and just being in the room means that he will obviously pass his test. I have been watching this go on for 30 years, ladies and gentlemen. It has gotten progressively worse throughout that time. The nudging into, it's somebody else's responsibility to take care of me and do it for me, began 30-some-odd years ago with the creation of the Department of Education on the federal level and with the approach to education that was, I guess you could say, infiltrated into our liberal arts colleges by far-left thinking ivory tower idiots who tested their pet theories in college lab schools where the children were the sons and daughters of professors and who would have learned everything they got in the lab school by sitting at the dining room table with their parents 24 hours a day. The Common Core, aside from being a pernicious attempt to use our children as IBM cards to be stuffed into the correct slot so the machine works properly, is its reliance on training rather than teaching. And that is the underlying flaw. When you go to school, ladies and gentlemen, from first grade through the end of high school, you go there to be taught, not trained. Training from the age of birth through about 17 is the province of one's parents. Parents are there to train you into socially acceptable behavior, to train you into understanding that when you do something, you are responsible for the consequences thereof. My friend Doc made a statement that he saw a saying today that said, 40 years ago we taught Latin and French in high school, and today we teach remedial English in college. And he is quite correct. And it isn't just today. I remember 25 years ago when one of the universities in the southwest of this nation changed its textbooks in the remedial English class for high school freshmen to sixth grade level reading because they couldn't pass the remedial English class if they kept it at eighth grade where it was. Some of you may have gotten in an email or seen online or had a friend refer you to an eighth grade social studies test that the vast majority of college freshmen today probably could not pass. I have another little tidbit of history. I'm pretty sure that all of you have heard of William Bonney, otherwise known as Billy the Kid, and I'm fairly familiar with the fact that he was a gunman who lived in New Mexico, who was arrested and tried and found guilty of murder in a series of cattle wars that were going on there. Well, Mr. Bonney, while in jail, wrote a letter to the then territorial governor, Lew Wallace, author of the novel Ben-Hur, by the way, requesting a pardon. And Mr. Bonney, now I don't know whether he wrote the letter or his lawyer did, but if he wrote it, Mr. Bonney's epistle was in better English, more coherent, and grammatically more correct than 90% of the college freshman's work that I have seen. We no longer teach our children in school. We train them. We train them to believe that everybody owes them something, that government is God, and that if they screw up, somebody will be right there to pull them out of the mess they created and tell them it's all right so their self-esteem is not wounded. We train them to believe that no matter how poor their performance, they too will get a trophy because they're special and they were there. We train them to believe that violent bullies are just poor, unloved creatures who need to be hugged, and soon they'll understand that what they're doing isn't nice and stop. We train them to run to somebody else to solve their problems. We train them to believe that because they exist, the world is going to roll over, show its belly, and wait to be scratched. Part of this training comes from the fact that in our attempts to be kind and compassionate, and Americans are kind and compassionate, all you have to look at is who's first online with a checkbook when there's a disaster anywhere in the world. We carry that kindness and compassion to absurd lengths. And in the name of kindness and compassion, we are fuzzy-minded enough to believe that the kindest thing to do to a person is to make sure that they never face stress, that they never fail, they never have to do anything that's difficult for them, and teach them, train them to believe that everybody can't help but love them because they're so special and so sweet and so precious. Well, that kind of training, ladies and gentlemen, creates a lovely herd of sheep. And I'm sorry, I do not want government as my shepherd. But this is the end goal of governmental programs such as food stamps and WIC and welfare and free cell phones and income-adjusted housing and every aspect of Common Core and free appropriate public education under the Americans with Disabilities Act and accommodations and 504 claims and IEPs and everybody gets a trophy. We are fools, ladies and gentlemen, if we allow this to continue. Because one day, those of us who know what it's like to be an individual will probably die off, probably sooner than later under Obamacare, because we seniors, those of us who remember what it's like to actually learn something, are the first who are going to be denied care because our potential to fill the workforce is diminished based on our age. And that's even with all of the lovely legislation that says we can't discriminate against anybody for anything. Well, I don't believe in discrimination either. not the kind the government talks about, and not the kind that I grew up watching in Georgia when I moved there in 1963. The kind of discrimination I believe in is personal discrimination, to be able to tell the difference between right and wrong, and to be able to look at a person's character and not his race, his gender, his political affiliation, or his religious beliefs to determine whether or not I feel that person is of value. We have to be discriminating, ladies and gentlemen, in what the word originally meant, to be able to choose the best and not the worst. But the word has come to mean now saying or doing anything that is politically incorrect. We suffer from the disease of political correctness, and it's also part of the master plan to nudge us all into that happy little Borg collective. Because the Borg do not insult one another. The Borg are all equal. The Borg are all the same, with a few differences between which kind of artificial eye, hand, foot, whatever you happen to be needing at the moment that you remove from this drone and put it on to another one. We are so terrified of offending anyone that we refuse to even defend ourselves and speak the truth. It is true, ladies and gentlemen, that there are people in this world I do not like. Their behaviors, their actions, the way they treat others, I find incredibly offensive. But unless their behavior directly affects me, and if it does, I shall do something about it, they have a right to go to hell in their own handbasket. It is not my job to rescue them from the downward slide to perdition. That is their job. And we do not value that which we achieve too easily. When we tell our kids and adults that there is no bad behavior, only communication we don't understand, then we are telling them that whatever you do is just fine because you're just trying to tell me something. Well, I'm sorry, walking into my home with an assault rifle and shooting me is not an acceptable form of communication, and I refuse to stand for it. Some of my friends in the chat room are talking about the fact that we all get so frustrated that were we not ladies and gentlemen and capable of more sophisticated articulation, the air would literally be blue with various expletives. And there are times when an expletive is the only mot juste. And believe me, I have those times myself. I try to curb them during work hours because I don't wish to set a bad example for the children. They already know all the words, so I'm not teaching them anything new, and my job is to teach them something they don't know. So I wait until I get in the car, and then I exercise my freedom of speech and tell the radio exactly what I think of my day. So far, my car has not gotten offended and stopped on me, so I guess it's pretty safe to vent that way. Again, this absolute mania for controlling the lives of others has gotten to such huge proportions that there are days when I feel as if I am standing in the middle of the deluge and Noah and the Ark are nowhere in sight. My friend Sandy says, keep the windows up. Well, I would, but it gets hot in Virginia, even in October, Sandy, and sometimes I have to roll the window down and play the radio very loudly so that it covers the sound of my colorful metaphors, to quote Mr. Spock in Star Trek. But anyhow, colorful metaphors aside, it isn't any wonder that our kids are absolutely Hades on wheels when it comes to understanding how to treat others. They are being kept spoiled brats throughout educational experience. and our adults, our disenfranchised, disadvantaged, poor, whatever you want to call them, adults, are also being trained to remain spoiled brats. Benjamin Franklin said that the only cure for poverty is to make it uncomfortable to be poor. And he was quite correct. I'm a fair psychologist, although I don't have a piece of paper saying that I professionally practice psychology in a medical sense. But I do understand a lot about people. Living 66 years and not having been locked up as completely insane is pretty fair proof that, yeah, I have learned a little bit about people and what makes them tick. The one psychological mantra that anybody who's managed to survive past the age of 25 should have figured out is that people do not change their behaviors unless those behaviors become too uncomfortable for them. All the support groups and all the rest of it will do absolutely no good. Counseling, support groups, Alcoholics Anonymous type phone calls. None of these things will work if the individual has no desire to change. And the only way the desire to change can be inculcated is if the behavior is uncomfortable enough that that person wants to change it. When we make life easy, we eliminate any need for people to change behaviors that are socially delinquent or unacceptable. We reward them for remaining socially delinquent. We tell them they can't help it, that it's someone else's fault that they are psychotic, schizophrenic, a sociopath, whatever tag you want to put on it. They just need to be loved, and automatically they will, all of a sudden, the light will dawn, and they will become sweet, kind, loving, pick up a fuzzy bunny and cuddle it, angelic individuals. Well, they won't. And you won't get them to be that way by legislation and by government coddling and by making sure that nobody has to pay the consequences for their own actions. The number of kids that I see coming through my in-school suspension classroom who assume that, number one, if they don't know the answers to what they're working on, that I'm going to give them the answer, and that, well, he talked to me, that's why I didn't study, was an acceptable reason not to know anything when you're facing a test. The absurdity of the bread and circuses approach, which is what my friend Doc just mentioned, it only worked for Nero as long as the money held out. And when the money goes away, then you can't keep providing the bread and circuses. And we should all recognize after that debacle of a so-called deal that went through yesterday, that sooner or later the money is not going to be there. And as much as I don't want to be around when everybody's shooting everybody for the last Oreo cookie left on somebody's counter, I am well aware that people will not begin to rely on themselves and their own skills and their own ethics and values until government is either incapable of enforcing its control or has fallen completely apart and there is no more government at all. I do not want to live in anarchy, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to have just enough government so that I can make sure that when I go to the store to buy something, that my money will buy what the price says it will buy. I would like just enough government to make sure that the roads remain navigable, and that we are protected by a military that can repel an invader on our shores and protect us from those who would harm us. I would like just enough government so that we could figure out solutions to some of our problems and have a say in how they were carried out. I don't want so much government that I cannot breathe without someone measuring my pulse rate and quantifying how much oxygen I take in and carbon dioxide I exhale and giving me a breathing mask so that I don't pollute the atmosphere and don't have more than my share of life-giving oxygen. And as much as I dislike the idea of it, conspiracy theory and apocalyptic dysfunctional society and dystopia arriving next week, I am very concerned that that's what we will see. Because we see it happening in other places. We have in front of our eyes the results of the kind of totalitarianism and the iron control in North Korea. We have it in Iran. We had it in Iraq under Saddam Hussein. We saw it in Germany with Hitler. We saw it in Japan under the warlords. And yet we are doing everything we can to bury our heads in the sand and keep saying, oh, well, it'll be all right. The government will fix it. The government will not fix the problem. The government is the problem. Because it has convinced itself, through the medium of the people we elect to staff it, that it can do what God cannot. It can redesign human beings into the perfect sheep following the philosopher king shepherds who are happy and content and equal, who never have to make a decision because they might make a wrong one, so decisions are made for them. Who have no option to be selfish or generous because nothing they use is theirs. It is a gift of a kind and benevolent deified government. The relaxation and peace of not having to actually raise children, merely contribute an egg and a few sperm and let it sit in a box for a while and then hand it over to the government creche and have it raised to produce more eggs and more sperms to be decanted when we need more workers to build whatever it is the government says we need to build to keep us further controlled. And yes, that's a dystopian fantasy, and yes, it's a conspiracy theory, and yes, it's a worst-case scenario, but it isn't impossible. And that part scares me, ladies and gentlemen. It is not impossible. I saw something on Facebook today that kind of tickled me. And I heard it again when I was listening to Fox News when I got home from work. I can't remember whether it was this morning or this afternoon. The day kind of ran together. But there was a gentleman on Fox News who was representing a group of concerned American veterans and speaking out on their behalf and on behalf of the serving troops, because troops serving active duty are not permitted to give their opinion about anything that could be determined to be political. And on Facebook, somebody said in a comment on something about the World War II vets who physically removed the barricades that our oh-so-benevolent president ordered put in front of the memorial that they weren't even allowed to go look at, that we needed more of them running for office. And it was kind of like, to quote Casey Stengel, deja vu all over again. It made me think of Robert Heinlein's science fiction novel, Starship Troopers. In that novel, Heinlein created a future in which citizenship required military service. If you wanted to be a citizen and vote and hold office, you had to wager your precious body and defend the earth in the military. And when you completed your tour of duty, then you had citizenship and you had a right to vote and choose those who would make laws and run for office and make laws yourself. And it struck me as absolutely perfect. The visionaries of the science fiction community back in the 1950s and 60s astounds me, because so many things about which they wrote in their future universes, dystopian or otherwise, I see happening around me. And Robert Heinlein is one of my favorite authors, because he was, first and foremost, an individualist. His view of the universe and life and people was that it is the individual who creates and innovates and makes the progressive leaps. Committees have never designed and built anything. And the understanding of the value of the individual is both exhilarating for those of us on the right side of the political spectrum and terrifying to those on the left and far left. Because individuals generally buck under the saddle of control. Individuals don't meekly bow their heads for the bit. Individuals don't line up and put out their forefoot for the collar or the slave ring. And liberal progressives are afraid of individuals because of that very thing. One of the greatest things about this nation of ours that we should be teaching in school is not our quote-unquote equality. It is our incredible variety of differences, and not in the politically correct way of diversity as the left sees it. The left's diversity is lip service to anything that is different from what your parents taught you because your parents are stupid. That is how the left actually defines diversity. Real diversity is the best of many cultures coming together to create a new and vibrant one, the United States of America. And that is how we got to be who we are. The flood of immigration, the cultures that were already here, that got incorporated into the way that we think, the way that we design, the way that we create, the way that we imagine. That is our strength. My friend Doc says that a key word is the best of other cultures, and he's right. That is what we used to look for. Now, it swallow the other culture whole and put it up on a pedestal above your own, because obviously if you don't, you are a racist, bigoted, terrorist, reactionary, evil, wicked, nasty conservative. I'll take the zero from Islamic culture, but I will not take the way Islam deals with women. I'll take the idea of meditation as a gateway to spiritual experience from Buddhism, but I will not take the don't step on the cockroach because that might be Uncle Fred aspect. I will take the wonderful stories of the battle of good against evil in the Hindu pantheon, but I am not going to leave a dead cow in the middle of the street because it's sacred, and if I moved it and buried it, I'd be defying the gods. My friend Sandy says the worst thing in our language is the hyphen. I, too, am tired of hyphenated Americans. If you come here to become a citizen of this nation, then you are here to become an American. Not a whatever American, not a whichever, not a whoever, not a something else, but an American. And there is an assumption on the part of the left that America has no culture of its own. That's why it's so poor and it has to adopt and place on pedestals every culture other than ours. The collective doesn't have a culture, ladies and gentlemen. The collective has the Marxist use theory, which means we tailor our children to be of use. We tailor them to fit into the nice little recharging station and come out when their particular mechanical attachment is needed. Okay. My friend Yolanda asked, when is America Day? We have a day for practically everybody else, and everybody else in the chat room is saying, oh yeah, that day would be July 4th, commemorating the signing of the Declaration of Independence, in which we declared a revolutionary, no pun intended, idea that all men are created equal and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, and that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. Those ideas, ladies and gentlemen, were absolutely insanely crazy radical in 1776. People believed that kings got their power directly from God, and they were God's representatives, the divine right of kings. I'm in charge of you because God made me be born into this royal family, and I'm the eldest son, so obviously God wants me to tell you what to do. Carrying primogeniture to, we don't believe that. We don't believe that the family into which you are born guarantees you a position of power. Now, some folks in Virginia do, but most of them are dying off by now. That belief is more common in the South than it is anywhere else, and even that is going away. And it's really funny when you stop to think that many of the framers of the Constitution and the author of the Declaration of Independence himself was a Virginian. People like to feel that they have a place in the world. And this is the seductive human failing that progressives exploit. That need to feel that you have a place, you belong, you are important in some fashion, is one of the things that progressives use to further the collective. They dress up their collective in all of the trappings of, well, everybody needs to feel good about themselves. Everybody needs to feel that they're part of something. The group is the safety. The group is the good. Yes, we like to feel as if we're part of something, a family, a club, a church, a community, whatever it is. We are gregarious beings. We live in groups. We interact with one another. We are not solitary hunters who mate, let the kids grow up and go off and be solitary hunters again. The family is the first and most strong of these groups, these belonging places. All you have to look at is last names, okay? The custom of giving people last names began when human beings settled down from hunter-gatherers and began to live as agricultural farmers, to begin to create villages and communities. You needed to have a designation that differentiated you from Umba over here and Umba from the village down the river. So you were Umba Gorkson, because Gork was your daddy, and the Umba down the river was Umba of the river. So you knew which Umba you were talking about when you said, Umba stole my cow. Last names. Something we all take for granted. It fills that need for a place, an association, a group affiliation. Yes, we need these things. But we do not need artificially created groups that stifle our ability to step outside the group and think of something new once in a while. Progressives have taken a leaf from the master psychologists in various religions, among which the top one is the Catholic Church. I know, I was brought up that way. Catholicism and the way that it is run is a master psychologist. Just the innumerable numbers of orders of priests and nuns. I mean, there's a clerical collar or a habit for anybody, no matter what your tastes, inclinations, or talents. The understanding of that people need to feel that they are affiliated with some other people in some way. Because we need one another. Our creative spark needs tinder. And more than one creative spark falling on tinder creates great fire. We need each other. We cannot battle the monsters of the world all alone. We need solidarity and group affiliation to defend ourselves from those who would take what is ours, to protect our young, because our babies can't get up and run with the herd 10 minutes after they're born. We need the security of an identity within a group. And as I said, the first and most important one is family. Well, if you want to make sure that that basic human need is turned away from the individual within a group, then the first thing you do is to make family, traditional family, somehow old-fashioned, non-productive, bad for everybody. Those of you who are old enough to remember the sitcoms of the 1950s, The Father Knows Best and the Leave It to Beavers and so on and so forth, and the Donna Reed Show and all of those. Yeah, they were saccharine. Yeah, they were sweet. Yeah, they were idealized. And I remember when I was in college in the 60s, how everybody was turning their back on the idea of, gee, mom and pop and brother and sister and nice house in the suburbs, and this is so bourgeois, and we need to go out and live in a commune and share everything because, and you know, it's more fun to get dirty, and nobody should be allowed to tell us to take a bath, and we don't feel like it. You know, that was my youth generation. The man is keeping me down. Blame game. Yeah, pretty much. And if you understand the buttons to push, ladies and gentlemen, and believe me, progressives understand the buttons, then you're going to get people who ordinarily would hold up their hands in holy horror and run like crazy away from such ideas to buy into them. Because you're going to use the fruit that looks so good and smells so good and tastes so good until you get to the poison in the middle, and then it's too late. Every progressive lawmaker, pundit, teacher, whatever, is always talking about how much better the world's going to be if we just let them take over. They'll protect us from ourselves. They'll take away that really nasty feeling of uncertainty when you have to make your own decisions. They'll keep us perfectly safe and perfectly comfortable. We won't have to take any risks. Everything will be brought to us. We will be safe from risk. We will be protected from the consequences of having to decide anything. And for many people who do not trust their own ability to deal with bad consequences, this sounds like heaven on earth, and they buy into it. They buy into it. My friend Linda says they're now envisioning what our history should look like from the future. And yeah, and they're rewriting it in the process. For many, many people, I think for all of us, there are times, ladies and gentlemen, when I would love to have somebody take the weight of decision-making off my shoulders. I would love to go back for 10 minutes or so to being five and having mommy and daddy right there to pick me up when I fall down and skin my knee, and give me a lollipop and put antiseptic on it and cuddle me and tell me it'd be all right and they'd take care of me. I would really enjoy that for about 10 minutes. And then I'd start wondering. And then I'd start wanting to get down off the lap and go out there and see if I could ride the bike better so I didn't fall off and skin my knees. Well, government wants me to stay on the lap. It doesn't want me to go out and try to ride that bike again because I might fall off again. And then government's going to have to supply me a Band-Aid for my knee and a lollipop to keep me happy. So it's better to keep me happy and on the lap with another lollipop and another bandage and more anesthetic so I don't feel anything, including the desire to explore or the need to take a risk or wanting to try something different. It's safe on the lap, and they want us to stay right where we are. Moms, and I know there are a lot of moms out there listening, and I know there are some moms in the chat room, know that as much as they would love to wrap their tiny one in their arms and keep them safe from every bump, every bruise, and every nasty little playground bully, they cannot do that and see their child fly. You can't keep them on your lap forever and then send them out and tell them, now be an adult. And wise and good women who raise children and wise and good men who raise children know this. Currently, there is a situation in my school where a paraprofessional and a teacher are on leave and have been for this is the second week now. And the reason they're on leave is because a parent of a child who has special needs has basically threatened the administration over an accommodation for the child that the child doesn't want but can't seem to convey to the mother, and force the administration to put this teacher and this paraprofessional on leave in order to pacify the mother so she won't bring suit against the school. Well, I know the paraprofessional, and I know the teacher. And I know that both of them are dedicated professionals who care about teaching children and helping them to become the most they can be, and not coddling them, and not promising them that nobody will ever make life difficult, but giving them the tools as best they can, given the limitations of the children they teach, to be as independent as possible, even though they are special needs and may never actually be fully independent, but at least will broaden their horizons so that they can gain a modicum of independence and feel honest self-esteem from achieving a difficult goal. And these people are being kept away from doing this for children to placate one individual who does not want to let her child off the lap. And this kind of thing, this mistaken compassion and upside-down kindness permeates our school systems. Last week, I talked about, or 2 weeks ago, I talked about an article, an editorial in the Wall Street Journal, written by a woman who was remembering a music teacher she had had in high school, who had passed away, and his former students came from the ends of the earth to his funeral. He was a tough teacher. He very rarely gave praise, and the best praise you got from him was not bad. He believed that if you played badly, he told you so, and he expected you to rise to the challenge and be better and work at it. And she went on to list 8 bullet points of what tough teachers give to children. And one of them was that children need to experience at least some degree of stress. And it was funny because I lost my husband last March, and I get a daily thing from the funeral home that is an affirmation, or it's basically advice on how to deal with grief. And one of the things that came up this week was that people who have suffered stress and loss tend to rebound and heal more quickly than those who have not. As my friend Sandy says, what doesn't kill us makes us stronger. We need to be able to teach our children, while we can put them in an environment where the consequences of failure are not life-threatening, to understand that, yes, if you fail, it's stressful, but that can drive you to try harder and succeed the next time. And we have to try to teach them in an environment where a mistake is not life-threatening, that not everybody in the world is going to love and pet and coddle them, and that sometimes people are mean and spiteful and small. But that doesn't mean you have to be. And that mean and spiteful and small people only see the mean and spiteful and small in others. And we have to do this with common sense, because our kids are not going to live in a world where nobody ever says a harsh word to them, and where everything falls into their laps merely by their wanting it. They are going to live in a world where their effort is going to have to be expended in order to get what they want. And if we do not teach them, when they are in that safe environment where the consequences won't kill them, they aren't going to learn it in time to be able to go out into the big wide world and not get killed. Don't get me wrong, ladies and gentlemen. I know better than a lot of people the sheer power of love. I'm a Reiki practitioner. Level 3. I understand and use that wonderful energy to help people heal. But I also understand that there are some people who, for whatever reason, cannot accept love. They cannot accept kindness. They cannot empathize with others. I can't tell you why, because I cannot see into their minds and their hearts. Only God can. I do not think of myself as in any way divine. And if there's ever a job opening for that top slot, I'm not putting in my resume, because I sure as heck don't want the responsibility. I try to understand why people do what they do out of enlightened self-interest. If I want to live in an environment that nurtures me, I want that environment to be as free from evil influences and bad vibrations as I can make it. So if I encounter someone whose vibrations are always bad, always critical, always angry, always denigrating to others, I do everything I can to avoid being in the society of that person. Sometimes that's not possible. Sometimes you have to work with someone who is like that. Sometimes you have to live near someone who's like that. Sometimes, through no fault of your own, you run afoul of someone who's like that. who sees you or something you've done or something you have as an insult to their small soul, and the only way they can feel good about themselves is to make someone else feel miserable. I don't enjoy being around people like that, but I do know they exist, and I have had to be around some people like that in my lifetime. But because I grew up in a society and with a family and a school system and a government that accepted the fact that human beings were just that, human beings, I was not immediately sent into a spiral of depression and went home and killed myself because somebody was mean to me. I don't like bullies. I don't think bullying is a fine thing to do. I think that bullies need to receive a little bullying themselves in order to understand the effect it has on others. But neither do I think that many of the supposed bullying driving to suicide cases that we hear about are inevitable and always the fault of the bully. Part of what makes a person vulnerable to a bully is the lack of real self-esteem. And our enlightened government, in its attempt to build self-esteem in our school children, thinks that doing that can be best accomplished by giving them a grade and telling them how wonderful they are. Real self-esteem is liking who you are. Maybe not all the parts of you, but most of you. And not feeling that because you enjoy building models of dinosaurs out of toothpicks, that makes you totally worthless, and because people laugh at it, you should go home and kill yourself. The incidences of preteen and early teen suicides have risen astronomically in the last 15 to 20 years. And it's being blamed on things like cyberbullying. And I can kind of understand, because our kids are addicted to the idea that everything they do has to be posted on YouTube or Facebook. And if you don't have 50,000 followers or friends, you're obviously a really bad person and nobody loves you and you might as well end it all. But that's not the fault of the bullying. That's the fault of the parents who do not give that child something else to do besides put every minute of their lives on an internet website. If you weren't on Facebook 24 hours a day, you wouldn't even notice you were being cyberbullied. I get really, really tired of easy button answers, ladies and gentlemen, and I hear and see them over and over and over again. Every single day. Let's blame somebody. Let's blame video games. Let's blame bullies. Let's blame YouTube. Let's blame Bush, for God's sake, for this current government shutdown. Oh yeah, that one came out too. It's always somebody else's fault. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the direct path to that lovely Borg Collective. Because when you're a member of the Borg Collective, you don't even know there is somebody else because you don't have a mind of your own. And the first step to that state is to convince yourself that anything and everything you do that doesn't work out right turns out that way because somebody else did something bad to you. The Borg Collective, to some people, is the ultimate in personal safety. I get my dose of energy. I get to remain inactive and dream of whatever Borgs dream about until I'm needed. Then I get to go out and I get a new mechanical part when something fails. And if I'm destroyed, my consciousness isn't because I'm sharing the consciousness of everybody else and we're all together in the great soup. To some people, this is a nice thought. To some people, this is very pleasant. To some people, this is the ideal. This is their version of heaven, the hereafter. It's even codified in Buddhist thinking that true enlightenment is becoming one with everything. Like the old joke, what did the Buddha say to the pizza vendor? Give me one, make me one with everything. Well, I'm sorry, folks. I'm not a very good Buddhist because I don't want to be one with everything. I want to be me. Flawed and feeble and old and crotchety and everything else that I am, I like me. I even liked me when I was 16, which is pretty remarkable. There were parts of me I didn't like. I wished I were 30 pounds less in weight and 4 inches taller in height and, you know, a lot prettier in the face, but I knew I wasn't going to be able to do the prettier in the face bit, and I did grow an inch when I was 17, but that was it. And the weight business I worked on, and that I could take care of, but I was stuck with my face and stuck with my personality and stuck with the way my mind works. And I finally decided that since I like so much of me, why not just go ahead and like all of me? And once I figured that out, what other people said about me didn't really matter, because the people who knew me and liked me weren't going to listen to that garbage and weren't going to believe it if they did listen. Our kids are not being taught how to like themselves. They're being taught how to love themselves to the point of idolatry, but like themselves. My friend just says, as long as I'm there, that's all that matters. And you bet. Honey, I'm always there. Inside joke, folks, and one day I'll devote a whole show to it. But our kids don't need to be nudged into Common Core, Borg Collective, fit into the slot, and you'll be happy thinking, ladies and gentlemen. What they need to be is taught, not trained. They need to be exposed to all sorts of knowledge, many different cultures, many different ideas, so that their darling, beautiful, shining little brains can stretch and grow and create. Have a caller on hold, folks. Let's see who's calling us tonight. Hello there.
Hi, it's Linda from California. Call me Linda.
I figured that was you, my dear girl. When are you going to pack your mother in a trunk and bring her to Virginia and live next door to me?
I don't know, but she won't go, so she's serious about not leaving. Oh, man,
hey,
there's no way.
You know something? Kidnapping is a good thing, Linda. Kidnapping is a good thing.
I think my sister and all my nieces would go nuts if I did that. They would hunt me down.
Then they'd come to Virginia and find out what it's like here, and then they'd be so happy they had to hunt you down, they'd stay right here and everything would be fine.
Yeah, you don't know my family, I'll tell you. When you talk about misplaced priorities, we got them in my family. I don't even want to go there.
I think every family does, honey, and the nice part is that we aren't our family. Love them or hate them, we are not them, we are ourselves. And God bless them, they are.
I get
they're
that, I know.
Too.
Oh, no, I love them dearly, and I wish them well, but I fear that they're going to, you know, once this thing hits, whenever it does. I don't think it's a matter of if, it's a when, you know, especially with the monetary system, and I don't want to harp on that, but, I mean, it's coming. There's not one economist out there that hasn't talked about it, not one.
I know it. And what you have to do is look at the Weimar Republic. We're doing exactly the same thing that they did. And it's going to have
exactly
consequences.
I'm sure you've read enough history because you've been immersed, but there was one piece that I missed, and I need to do some more research tonight on these things and finish my Econ 101 from Hillsdale.
Good for you, by the way.
It's really fun. I'm doing week 4. Anywho, this one that Anne Barnhart brought up, it was 1946 Hungary, and they had a hyperinflation to beat all hyperinflation, I think, in human history. They were not dealing with trillions. They were of currency value and whatever, or inflation. They were dealing in quads and quints. I mean, this was unprecedented, and I'm going to read more about it. But on her website, barnhart.biz, B-I-Z, you guys can check that story out. She also did a really great synopsis of Stalin's Ukraine, which complete with pictures, and I'm glad she did that because people need to know this.
Yes, they do.
So, you know, when you deal with what's going on with Common Core, and I don't know if you saw Glenn's show today, I was horrified. I mean, absolutely
horrified. No, I didn't.
Horrified. You got to check it out.
I didn't watch it, but I can get it on with the reruns because they run it later on in the evening and on the weekends too. So.
Absolutely. You can get it after his running of it is completed, I can usually get, like, mine 2 hours after he starts, and then that closes down with the, you know, news portal, and then I can do the archives. But what happened was he was showing these tides, entities and of these universities, so they're married. Soros, the media, the government, the universities, and this group called Imagine America. And when at the last part of the show, when Glenn had Rafael Cruz on there, Rafael says, "Boy, that reminds me of what I heard under Castro." And when he first started, I mean, every single thing that's going on right now has been done before, said before,
and it failed miserably.
Oh,
it's failed miserably every time,
and it
will again.
They're gonna, and what they're doing with this new visioning thing, they want to read history in real time. They are not just, you know, they'll make it part of the curriculum and they'll do it in hard copy. But I'm telling you, this is, and you know, they're using every medium of culture and movies and radio and TV, et cetera. This is Goebbels' dream. This is Mises' dream. I'm telling you, it's evil. Evil.
It is.
And so,
but when,
we cannot
whenever you,
sit by and go ahead.
Whenever you have a huge conglomerate, okay, which we have right now, basically all of the newspapers in America are owned by six corporations. Every single one of them. So what you are getting is not the reflection of public opinion in the editorial page. You're getting what the corporate authorities think will sell newspapers or get onto CNN and the other liberal media voices. I mean, it's Fahrenheit 451 all over again.
Oh, my God.
I mean, because that the whole point of Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451 was that when you – are able to feed people information and get them addicted to one source of it, then you have them tightly under your control. Because even if you walked up and shoved Dickens underneath their nose, if they can't read it, they can't think about some of the things he talks about.
Exactly.
It's not possible. And there's no way that our kids are going to be able to survive when everything collapses, because they're going to be standing there with their mouths open and their hands out, and there won't be anybody to come along with fistfuls of cash and free cell phones. And they're
going
to scramble.
And there won't be anyone to change their dieties either, because that's the state
exactly.
that they're going to be in.
Yeah, exactly. A nice warm lap and extra thumbs to stick in their mouth when their own gets wrinkled from malnutrition. You know, it's... the human race
very sad.
Will survive. The human race will survive. And it will survive intact in the sense that individuals will come to the fore. We may see Heinlein's Starship Trooper world come to the forefront. That really tickled me when I saw that comment about we need more retired military guys running for office. And it's quite true. Because when you have, as Professor Dubois says in his History and Moral Philosophy class in the book, when someone has said, "I am willing to give my life for the good of all of us," they have raised their understanding of Maslow's hierarchy of needs to the pinnacle of the ladder, because it's no longer me. It's no longer self-actuation, self-gratification, or minimal group. It's the protection of all, and I am willing to sacrifice myself that all may be well. And not because government told me to, but because I chose to. Because in Heinlein Starship Troopers, you're not forced into the military. It's volunteer. So if you don't want to put forth your life on, you can live perfectly comfortably and be quite happy.
I don't think they had a draft in the Revolutionary War, so that was also voluntary.
No. They didn't. They did during the Civil War, and, of course, the draft riots in Boston and New York were the result of that. Plus, that's
right.
How some Irishmen got into the army, because you could pay somebody to take your draft slot. And the Irish were hungry enough and belligerent enough that they said,
sure.
Yeah, give me the money, I'll give it to Mama, and I'll go fight the nasty Southern rebels and Aaron Gavraw, you know. You can always get an Irishman to fight. Hand him a bottle of whiskey and tell him, call him a name, and he's ready. I mean, you know, you got it. But
it's so true.
And that goes back to what I was saying earlier about the best of other cultures. That's the kind of natural selection that we should be promoting, not the government's form, which is, I think you will make an excellent file clerk here. Go here.
Sure.
And it's,
Oh, that's what they do in China and Russia. They've done it in all of these situations. Because, I mean, let's face it, Hitler did it too. He put people where he wanted them. I mean, of course, he had, like, when you had Mengele, he was already a doctor, so he just, you know, plucked him aside.
Do you remember Nadia Comăneci and Olga Korbut?
Yeah.
The Romanians sweeping the gold medals in gymnastics. They were plucked out of kindergarten and sent to special gymnastics schools. If they exhibited any skill at all. And those poor darlings, with the exception of Olga, never smiled. And the reason she was so captivating was because she did. We were so used to Russian athletes looking as if they'd been carved from stone or were practically animated. Yeah.
Oh.
It's the idea that the whole progressive liberal agenda is about killing individuality for the good of the group. And some people are stupid enough to believe that that's possible and good, and others are venal enough to promise it in order to cement their own power. And you get the stupid and the venal together, and you've got an almost unstoppable force. You know, ignorance is curable. Stupidity is not.
Right. Now, exactly. And the problem is what they've done. And they literally retard the human mind when they get the kids in these indoctrination daycare centers.
Tell me about it. Tell me about it.
This is so evil. This is the part that just makes me crazy. Why anyone on this planet would send their kids to a public school is beyond my comprehension at this point, because it's what they're doing, especially with Common Core in California and other states, not just here. There's like 45 states that are still doing it. Because a few of them got smart and said, no way in H are we going to do this. So now for decades, and you know, this is going way back to when I was a kid, because when my dad, I was 15, and my dad was doing the reading labs in his school, he said, I can't teach English. He says, my God, they can't read. They can't even spell their own names when they're sophomores. He says, I need to teach them to read. So what they've done is they've dumbed them down. Now they can't read correctly like they should be able to, like you and I can read Shakespeare if we wish. We can read cartoons if we wish, you know, so we have everything in between. These poor people cannot. This is where they've got them now. And then when they start doling out this fake history and they're just spoon-feeding it, just like propaganda through a radio tube, you know what I mean?
Yep, exactly.
This is exactly where they want them, and then they're going to rewrite everything, and they're going to rewrite the Constitution, and they're going to – all of it. That's what they want to do.
I know. Well, that's one of the reasons that, as frustrated as I get, Linda, that's one of the reasons I keep on working. I'm tired, you know? I'm tired.
I know.
Aside from the fact that I'd like to be able to pay my bills, of course, that's always a reason to keep working. But I cannot fight the whole machine. What I can do is infiltrate in my own sneaky, delicate little way and try to put some thoughts in the heads of the kids that pass between my delicate little digits. Like today, I was going over civics with a kid about that was day before yesterday, where I was explaining to him, reading aloud a chapter in the civics book, a section, because his ability to read and understand it in eighth grade was not there.
Wow.
If I had had him read it to himself, he would have looked at the words he recognized, like of, and, the, dog, cat, mouse, whatever, and the whole sense of the entire section would go away. But he did understand many of the words when they were spoken, but they didn't come off the page for him. They didn't mean anything when he saw them in print. And this is a specific learning disability. So this kid needs to have books on tape for textbooks. He needs to have the textbook on a tape where it's read out loud to him. And that would be wonderful. But how are you going to do that in the class when he's in a collaborative class with 26 other people?
Oh, geez. It's ridiculous. That's your frustration, exactly. Well,
yes.
The same way you're trying to teach the children, I'm trying to educate adults out here.
I envy you, sweetie. I've done that, too.
When I do my blogging, you know, when I mean educated by social media, whatever, whether it's through the newspapers, whether it's through a city council meeting, whether it's through Facebook, and I tell them, I go, especially the ones who are at least halfway on board and get it now, I say, look, you guys, whatever comes down, whatever you're prepping for, whatever you're buying out there and hoarding, make sure you have your Bible, your Constitution, and your history books, and you hang on those and make that part of your bug-out bag because you are going to need them very soon and never lose it. Don't ever lose sight of it.
I have this vision of me doubled over at 106 in a cave somewhere being one of Bradbury's book people. I mean, you know, and sitting there reciting The Hobbit to a gathering of small children. If I live that long, I will have the hidden copies inside the insulation in Kiva, and they'd have a heck of a time trying to burn Kiva because it's rock, you know. So maybe I can preserve a library.
That's funny.
But
I know.
Can't you see me doing that, Linda? I can.
Exactly. Oh, of course.
I can.
You will stand that ground forever. No.
Yeah,
well, I'm going to thank you for taking my call and let you wrap it up. And, oh, man, it's a pleasure. And again, everyone needs to check out everything they can on the Internet about this, what they call Imagine America group, and also check out Ann Barnhart's site. Man, she's got some great stuff in there. And it's really not a long site, so it's really,
super.
Really good.
Thank you for the recommendation.
Guys.
And thanks for calling in, honey. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you. God bless.
Bless you, Dar. My friend Linda, God bless her. She's got a tough job because, even tougher than mine, kids still have a few little cracks in their delicate little forming brains that I can slip into. Adults have closed the doors a lot of the time, and they refuse to learn. And it's sad because what makes this nation and what makes our species of being so great is the fact that we are born to be lifelong learners. It's how we have gotten from heating with logs in a fireplace and leaky roofs made of tar paper to the kinds of lives we lead now. With the huge burgeoning of technology and science and medicine and understanding how the universe works and theoretical physics, these things don't come from the collective, ladies and gentlemen. They come from individual minds. Endowed by their creator with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Happiness is not something that gets handed to you with your baby rattle. Happiness is something you chase your entire life, and if you're blessedly lucky, you might catch its coattails in the process. And you have to keep chasing, and you have to keep pace, or it will elude you. You can't sit back and wait for it to fly in through the window and land on your head. You have to. My friend Jo said that she doesn't have any or many history books. Well, go buy some, sugar. Believe me, if we all understand what it really means to learn isn't just give your opinion about the current political situation or argue with a friend down the street over whether barbecue should be Carolina style or Virginia style or pick up a new recipe off Facebook. All of these things are good things, but they are not the sum total of real learning. Real learning is expanding your horizons, finding out that there's something you don't know about and then hunting it down like a wolf on the trail of a juicy rabbit until you catch it and devour it and taste it and savor it, head, tail, feet, hide, and all. That's what being a lifelong learner is. That is the passion that is built into us by our Creator. Because if you believe that we are created in the image of he, she, it, or they who created us, then we too must be creators. And we cannot do that in a collective. We can only do that as individuals, as individual minds, hearts, and souls. The collective cannot create. The collective can only control. I tell my students in my ISS classroom, because the reason they wind up in there is because they don't understand self-control, that the only human being in your life over whom you will ever achieve 100% control is yourself. If you believe that you can or should control others to make your life better, you are in for a very devastating surprise. Because you cannot control the mind and the heart and the feelings and the soul of another human being. You can only control your own. And our children need to understand this. They cannot play a blame game and make everybody else responsible for controlling them and crying out and whining and beating their fists against a wall when somebody won't do what they want. They cannot be allowed to remain infants forever. As much as we as parents and teachers and adults would like to spare them the bumps and bruises and hurts that living this life as a human being entails, we cannot and give them their wings. The old cliche about mama bird has to let the baby leave the nest and fall on his little beak until he figures out how to flap and stay afloat is a cliche because it is true. Our children are not copies of us. They are not dolls that we dress in frilly clothes or blue jeans and play with trucks and sit on the floor and goo-goo and gaga and stick their thumbs in their mouths for the next 50 years. We cannot keep them baby dolls forever. We cannot send them out into the world with no armor, ladies and gentlemen. We have to teach them how to create it while we can still give them a degree of safety. We cannot allow the government or pundits or liberal college professors or Common Core to send our precious children into the world naked of protection against the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. Because those slings and arrows are out there. One of the reasons that Shakespeare is still read is because Shakespeare was damned bright at understanding the human condition and what makes us what we are. Thank you, everyone, for joining me here tonight on Blog Talk Radio. All my friends in the chat room, my delightful second family on www.patriotfamilies.com, and all of you out there in the Ethernet listening to me rant and rave about the horrible state of education. But please don't take it that I'm a defeatist. I'm not. I believe in us. I believe in the human spirit, and I believe it will and shall and should continue and succeed. So I'll say good night for now, and I will see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio. And I hope and pray that every single one of you will be a lifelong learner and take delight in the incredible beauty of our individual diversity. And as always, all my love to my greatest fam.
Blog Talk Radio and Patriot Family is where you need to be if you want to be informed and inspired 5 days a week. On Monday at 7:30 p.m., you can listen to the Constitution Hour. On Tuesday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Patriot Family Chat. On Wednesday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Right from the Left Coast. On Thursday at 6 p.m., you can listen to Patriot Education. And on Friday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Exposed but Never Forgotten. All times are Eastern Standard Time. Hope to see you there.